episode 426 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Justice League Spotlight episode. I'm going to be talking about Justice League number 4, written by Scott Snyder. The art is by Jorge Jimenez. We've got colors by Alejandro Sanchez and letters by Tom Napolitano. So this is continuing the Justice League story against the Legion of Doom, basically. You know, we saw in the first issue the Totality came to Earth, and Luthor started to gather his Legion of Doom around him. Last issue, we saw Superman and Martian Manhunter enter the Totality, and unbeknownst to them, although Batman was shrunk down microscopically and inside Superman, and Hawk Girl was shrunk down microscopically and inside Martian Manhunter, what they didn't know is that Luthor and Joker also were shrunk down and were in each of those heroes respectively. So we see some of the consequences of that in this issue, as well as basically the Legion of Doom kind of kicking it up a notch. Still don't know Luthor's plan fully, but starting to get an idea of what he's all about. So let me go ahead and give the synopsis for the issue, and then I'll talk about my thoughts a little more. The issue starts off with a really cool kind of one-page retelling of Grodd's history and kind of how he felt like an outsider compared to the other gorillas, and how he had these mental abilities. Then the scene shifts to inside the Totality. We see Superman and Martian Manhunter fighting against one of the... the antagonists that we saw in Justice League No Justice, you know, kind of those ancients of the universe. They almost look like aliens that were trapped on the Source Wall at some point. So we are still not privy to exactly the origins of the Totality yet. But we did see last issue, John, Martian Manhunter, tried to communicate with one of these aliens, saw something he didn't like, and then the aliens attacked. So as they're fighting, Superman's trying to get more information about John, like what exactly did he see? And John's like, no, there must be some defense. I've got to look into it further. And meanwhile, Superman's like grabbing him out of the way, like, John, you're distracted. You're not fighting. Look out. You're distracted. You're not fighting up to your ability. Meanwhile, inside Martian Manhunter, we saw last issue the Joker revealed himself. He actually managed to stow away inside of Hawk Girl's craft that was shrunk down and then injected into Martian Manhunter. Still a little fuzzy on how he was able to get into the craft, as well as how Luthor was able to get inside Superman. Right now I'm going off the theory that the doorknob that Luthor found at his father's old American Legion post in Kansas has some sort of teleportation ability, opens doorways, so to speak. I mean, it is a doorknob, but that's yet to be revealed. So Joker, with his magic chainsaw or whatever the heck it is, manages to knock out Hawk Girl and take over the craft. And as Batman is trying to communicate with her, he hears the Joker laugh come over his communication system. And he's like, Batman calls out to her again, nothing, only a wind of static until the worst sound on Earth, that laugh. His mind reels. So you can definitely say that Batman was not expecting, probably the last place on Earth he expected the Joker to show up, inside the craft that Hawkgirl was piloting, that itself was inside Martian Manhunter. Meanwhile, Luthor, who is also inside Superman, just like Batman is, starts to fire on Batman. To his surprise, he ends up having to eject from his craft before it explodes. And he did plan for a lot of the natural dangers that might actually occur inside Superman, you know, if there's anything we know about Batman, he's a planner. But there are other pathogens inside Superman, and we're assuming from what we learned in the first few issues that these are pathogens that were introduced in the environment of the totality itself. So it looks like one of these pathogens basically swallows Batman whole. It looks like a big round ball of teeth, basically, and it does swallow him whole. Meanwhile, on the moon, John Stewart and Cyborg are fighting against Sinestro. You know, we saw him show up at the end of last issue, bringing Umbrax to Earth. And again, we see Sinestro in his old school classic costume, which I love, the black and purple or black and blue. And we see these little heads floating around him. He clearly has been, I want to say it's almost like he's been taken over by the ultraviolet power. He talks about the ugliness inside him and the ugliness that we have inside of all of us. As he refers to John, he's like, you think your will is stronger than the ugliness that you have inside. But you can only avoid looking at it for so long. You need to embrace it, John, the real you, the light that will guide you home. And again, I go back to the idea that we've had so far in the story of Sinestro in his early days before he even became a Green Lantern, trying to find a way to make sure Umbrax was locked up forever. And now it seems like it's been completely flipped. So you just wonder how much the power of Umbrax, the power of the ultraviolet spectrum is controlling Sinestro. The other thing that's cool about it, I don't think I've mentioned this yet, is the fact that it doesn't really have a ring. It's almost like a tattoo on the finger. It looks sort of like an eye that manifests itself, and that's kind of where the power comes from. So again, that idea that the power is within, like the evil that is Umbrax that kind of infects you and takes you over and feeds off your own ugliness, as Sinestro mentioned. So John tries to resist the best he can, and Cyborg's mentioning that he's too powerful, the energy coming off of him is too much. And Stewart replies, no, as long as there's a ring on my finger. And Sinestro says, oh, do go on, and shoots his power at John. And as John's trying to block it, we see his ring like literally break apart when it's on his hand. And John is shocked at that. His jaw's on the ground. And Cyborg's like, John, your ring. John's, what's happening to me? As we see his costume start to change. And Sinestro says, simple. I infused the last of your cells with ultraviolet energy, making your transformation permanent. You'll never be a Green Lantern again. And Cyborg's like, come on, John, we're leaving. And they boom tube away. So at the bottom of the ocean, where we last left Flash, Wonder Woman, and Aquaman, we saw them get to a compound that they were led to when they were tracing the Still Force. And there was some what looked to be white Martians there. And as they start battling them, they're asking what they are, to which the white Martians respond, you. So apparently there's some mix of Atlantean, Amazon, and human, and Martian, apparently. But Aquaman says, you know, it doesn't really matter what they are. You know, we can, the only way we can learn from these beasts is when their corpses are on a slab. So as Flash goes to check out the rest of the base, or tries to, he realizes that the Still Force is still short-circuiting his powers, like whenever he fought the Turtle. And he's just not sure what's going on. And we see a voice from off-screen say, that's easy, Flash. It's like taking candy from a baby. And we see Grodd show up, and he still has that baby strapped to his chest, the baby that we had speculated on previously about who it could possibly be. The green tint led us to think of things like maybe Brainiac or Luther. But it turns out the green was very much suggestive, but in somebody we didn't expect. It's actually the Turtle. It's the fourth generation of the Turtle. We learn throughout the course of the fight that these experiments that the Turtle was doing with the Still Force were constantly aging him. And he would like be reincarnated, and he's finally to the point where this is the fourth generation Turtle, and he finally has a handle on the still force. So Garrod uses his mental powers to convince Wonder Woman that Cheetah is there. Meanwhile, Aquaman sees Black Manta, but they're actually seeing each other. So it's actually Wonder Woman fighting Aquaman, who she believes to be Cheetah, and Aquaman fighting Wonder Woman, who he believes to be Black Manta. Meanwhile, with the turtle right there, the still force ramping up to full power, the Flash is basically powerless. And what he doesn't realize is the harder he fights, that he's actually, he's the one, it's his power that is actually unlocking the still force and is powering the still force, his access to the speed force. As he threatens to stop Garrod, Garrod's response is, please try and make sure to give it your all. Meanwhile, the aliens that are fighting against Martian Manhunter and Superman tell each other, stop, do you feel it? The energy, that energy, that first force. So is the first force the still force? I don't know. We haven't learned exactly what all the forces are. We know there's the Sage Force, the Strength Force, and the Steel Force, but there should be four others. I guess the Ultraviolet Spectrum would be another. Still three yet to be revealed. So as the aliens kind of stop their fight, Superman takes advantage of their distraction to grab John Jones and kind of put some distance between them. And he finally confronts John. He's asking, John, what did you see? And John gives him the history of Mars, how they usually have a Martian that's somewhere off planet that stores, the history and the legacy and kind of the what it is to be Martian. And it's called the Keep. And that while he was off planet for many years searching for the Keep, he finally found the Keep on Thanagar. But she was old and her memory wasn't whole. But she confirmed that what killed Mars was a telepathic plague. And this plague supposedly shows you whatever your worst fear is magnified. But now she's starting to think, John is starting to think, that what she was told, what he was told and shown by the Keep was actually a lie. Because when the fatality was approaching, Vandal Savage sent him a vision of a Martian child taken and imbued with something ancient and terrible, like the oldest curse there is. And he saw a lot more too, horrors coming, end of everything. And because this vision came from Vandal Savage, he believed it to be a lie. But now he's second-guessing that. He's wondering if it's the Keep who lied. And everything he believed about Mars and about his purpose, were all lies leading him to just this exact place where he is now. And the decisions that he's making, the decisions that he has made in conjunction with the League, actions he took in Dark Knight's Metal, actions he took in No Justice, actions he took or things he allowed to happen by not stopping the totality in issue one are leading all the multiverse toward destruction. So as Superman is there saying, John, you're worried somehow this is your fault? Well, we're friends, so believe me when I tell you. And there's a shift in Superman at that moment. He says, it is. You're the doom of everything, so thank you. And John's shocked. He's like, what are you saying, Superman? To which Superman replies, no, Martian, not Superman. And John realizes it's Luthor. And we see a panel where Luthor's ship is kind of interfacing with Superman's brain. And apparently he's kind of taken over his body, so to speak. And Luthor calls for the Joker to do the same to Martian Manhunter, which he does. He attaches to his brain and jacks in. And we're yet to see what the consequences of that for will be. So meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, I couldn't resist saying that. Cyborg and John Stewart are trying to figure out exactly what's going on with John. John's very distressed that he can't access the green power battery anymore, and he feels a very strong pull toward the ultraviolet. And Cyborg's saying, yeah, and what's happening with the Steel Force? It's basically undoing the boundary between Earth and Umbrax. and the costume that Sinestro is wearing, which allows him to channel the invisible spectrum. He's using it to call people in. And John's like, call who? Cyborg says, from the readings, everyone on Earth. So they try to get in touch with the others, find out what's going on. Cyborg's very worried that if the invisible spectrum reaches full power, Umbrax is going to come through the membrane. There'll be no stopping it. But unfortunately, Flash is played directly into the hands of Grodd and the Turtle. And he gets warned by Cyborg too late. Flash, you have to stop. You're actually powering the Steel Force. But like I said, by then it's too late. The universe has stopped expanding. The membrane's gone. Umbrax is there. Sinestro's there with the largest core ever, as all the people he called have joined the ultraviolet force, the invisible spectrum force. We see that the rest of the villains realize that Luther was right. It's not just life. The universe itself has a dark soul, and that soul's been unlocked as we see that doorknob start to power up and hum in Luther's hand. And Luther says, hello, beautiful. As the totality, the multiverse itself, is now in front of them, they only need to reach out, grab it, and squeeze. And then we see the blurb for next issue, Next Doom Takes Hold. So we do know issue 5 will be an issue that focuses specifically on the Legion of Doom. What I'm hoping is we get a better understanding of what exactly Luther's plan is. You know, I can speculate, kind of read between the lines so far, but Snyder hasn't necessarily laid it out for us yet. But it does seem that all these forces are starting to align. The totality, all these other ancient forces that we're beginning to discover on Earth. And it seems like rather than try to keep the genie bottled up, which is kind of the approach that the Justice League is taking, Luther wants to unleash everything but have that power for himself, and kind of embrace it, right? Like, hey, if the universe is going to end because the source wall is broken, we might as well take, you know, every risk there is and go down fighting, I guess, is Luther's take on it, right? Like, let's throw all safeguards and all caution to the wind and see what happens, right? Like, if it's already going to end, like, what's the point? Where, as I said, I think that the Justice League itself wants to take a little more of a cautious approach. So it's interesting in a way. I find myself wondering, so whose story is this? Obviously, it's a team book. It's Justice League, and it ties in to the rest of the DC universe very heavily. It's what Snyder intended. But you look at things that have a lot of different characters, like Forever Evil by Geoff Johns, which, you know, he's gone on record as saying it's really a Lex Luthor story. And really, I feel like Luthor, since that time, has been very integral to the DC universe. We've seen, you know, he was a hero for a long time. We've only seen recently that Snyder's kind of flipped him back to the villainous side. But is he a villain, really? I mean, what are his motivations here? Is he trying to save everyone, or is he just like, well, I'm going to do what I want to do because the multiverse is dying anyway? You know, he's a much more interesting character when you put him in that gray area. You know, obviously he has an ego and you know, decades and decades of history as being, you know, a bad guy. So it's kind of hard to erase that. And Snyder does write him a little bit of a mustache twirler at this point, because we kind of don't understand his motivations yet. So it kind of just seems like he's doing bad for the sake of bad. But when I look at what I consider one of the greatest characters in comics these days, it's a Valiant character. Actually, it's Toyo Harada. And he lives in that gray area, right? Recently at San Diego Comic-Con on the Valiant panel, I asked the panelists there, which also included the I guess the creator of the current version of Toyo Harada. You know, he was around during the 90s when Valiant was a thing. But this most recent version created by Joshua Dysart, who's an incredible writer and has a lot of really, really great ideas. But he did such a great job of creating this character who really inhabits that gray area so well. And it's been an ongoing debate among Valiant fans. Is this guy a hero or is he a villain? Right? Like, he wants to create a utopia. He wants to create a society where everyone is equal and there is no want. There's no disease. There's no sickness. There's no poverty. There's no famine. And those are noble intentions, right? But he also subscribes to the notion that, you know, in order to make an omelet, you got to break a few eggs. And so I asked a panelist and everybody had a different answer. Like, there wasn't a consensus. Yes, he's a villain. Yes, he's a hero. So I feel like Snyder's trying to take Luthor in that direction, and it's a great direction to take Luthor in, based on what Geoff Johns did with him recently and wanting to kind of expand on that. The problem is, again, going back to 80 years or whatever it is of Luthor history where he's been a bad guy. So it's a little tougher to see him that way, you know, to even consider him a hero, even though recently he was more so that. Snyder has, as I said, reverted him to type somewhat. But until we know his motivations, it may be a little tougher. And for me personally, being a Superman fan for so long, you know, Superman's my favorite character, and I just don't know that I can ever see Luthor as anything but a despicable human being and a villain. But again, I go back to wondering who exactly this story is about. Is it a Luthor story? Is it continuing that story? Is it a Martian Manhunter story, a John Jones story? That's very possible. That certainly doesn't feel like a Batman story or a Superman story at this point. And it could be that Scott Snyder doesn't necessarily want to narrow it down. He really does want to tell a story of these heroes overall as a group. But I always find that even in team books, at least different arcs tend to be stories of, you know, a certain character, and everything else is a little ancillary. And I have to say, after 4 issues, this really kind of does feel like a Luthor story. He's sort of driving the narrative, because while the heroes are being very reactive, Luthor's the one that has the plan, and it's the one who's sort of driving the plot forward at this point. So it's a good story so far, not a great story. The first issue was great, and then I feel like the second issue really came down from that, as Snyder kind of put all the players into their particular place. And it's been ramping up since then and feeling more and more cosmic and more important. But again, I guess I go back to the fact that I'm really kind of a motivation guy. Like, I like to understand why characters are doing what they're doing. And so for me, because I don't understand fully what exactly is going on, what Luthor's idea is, what all the forces are, there's just too many questions still for me. To just enjoy the story for what it is, because I constantly find myself wondering about the blank spaces, right, and trying to speculate and fill it in. So I'll have to reserve judgment on Justice League until I get a little further down the line and get a few more answers. So I do want to comment on the art, though. Jorge Jimenez has been an incredible choice for Justice League. Really great storytelling, some awesome panels, some awesome scenes. I really love his version of Joker. I love the way he draws Martian Manhunter and Grodd as well, especially Grodd with the baby strapped to his chest. It's just a really fun visual. I would like to see some more Jim Chung art, though. Jim Chung did the first issue, and we haven't seen him since then. So I really do enjoy Jim's art as well. So looking forward to seeing him return to the book, and really looking forward to the next issue that focuses on the Legion of Doom and Luthor, so to speak. I know this next issue is written by James Tynan, who is a really, really great writer. So definitely looking forward to checking that out. So if you're reading Justice League and I've missed anything, or you have questions or anything like that, or comments, please reach out on social media. Let me know. Because I haven't seen too many people talking about Justice League in depth. I've just heard people say, "Oh, it's really good." So I'm curious. I kind of in a vacuum when it comes to Justice League. I hear a lot about a lot of other titles, especially Batman these days and Mr. Miracle. But I don't know. I feel like this can't possibly. I mean, it's Justice League, right? It can't possibly be flying under the radar, especially when it's this important to the DCU. I don't know. Like I said, I haven't heard a lot. So. I encourage you to reach out to me and let me know what your thoughts are. So I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for joining, everybody. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help us with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. All past episodes of the podcast are available on iTunes as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, be sure and check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movie and TV shows. As I mentioned, if you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Next show I have coming up is Palm Springs. Comic-Con, I think is what it's called. But anyway, it's coming up in August. I think it's the 25th or so of August. I'm going to be there. I will have a Comic Source lanyard. So as always, if you're going to be there, let me know. I'd love to meet up, take a picture, hook you up with the lanyard. So and look for some coverage of that show coming up real soon. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.